JP, we're just gonna bring us in, bro.
I'm
just
good.
For the sake of time, but
yeah, we're fine.
Man, that was this SR podcast. Welcome, we love you guys. Hopefully, Justin and I are gonna jump on and do a live chat with you guys. Stay tuned. We'll make the announcement there. But that was good for my soul. I think it was healthy. I think we did well, JP. I think to list this family time, so we'll just kind of open this up. We received a lot of feedback from a lot of people who thought maybe we weren't as clear as we should be.
Sure. I mean, there was a lot of overwhelmingly positive feedback too, but then, yeah, there were some people that thought we could have been stronger in some of our language. Maybe we weren't as clear as we could have been, and we wanted to seek to rectify that today, and hopefully we did. I mean, let me just start by saying some of this. I mean, John and I were talking about a number of things before we recorded, and he and I are of one mind as to what we want to talk about here on SR today. I mean, even for us, I mean, we did not record that podcast for the sake of any one or two or three individuals. We're not trying to assuage any particular person. We're like, hey, if we're getting feedback from people that maybe this was less than clear, we want to make sure that we come in and try to clear up any confusion that does exist. We hope we've done that. We do not assume that we're going to get it right every time we get behind the microphones, because we're fallible guys and we might not say things the ways that we should or want to say them. And we thank you for being gracious with us and give us feedback. And give it to us in gracious and kind ways. And we really appreciate that. And we will aim to respond in kind. So, yeah, John, I mean, I don't know how you want to kick this conversation off. I know what I want to do today is talk with our SR family and think about what it's like to encounter this kind of theology when you've never really heard it before. And you are having categories exploded left and right. You're coming from a context that was very different. Maybe it was a fundamentalist context. Maybe it was a lordship salvation context. Maybe it was a just general evangelical, broad evangelical context. I don't know. Fill in the blank. And I mean, maybe you came from just a super like abusive, heavy-handed church background. I'm not sure. But it's really easy for us when we encounter this kind of theology for the first time and we look back on what we used to experience. We have a lot of strong feelings about that. Mm-hmm. And we as human beings are pendulum swingers. I know we've said this a number of times, where we tend to, the pendulum doesn't stop in the middle, right? It starts over here and it starts to swing and it ends up way over here. And it doesn't stop here. And so we tend to fall off the other side of the horse quite a bit. And we can also be very emotional in the ways that we respond to theology because of the experiences that we've had. And a lot of times our thoughts are filled with emotion and vitriol and even bitterness towards what we experienced in the past. And what we want to do today is just talk to the person who might be experiencing that very reality, where you're angry, you're frustrated, you're bitter about what you used to experience in the church. You've been burned, you've been wounded, you've been hurt, and you are not quite sure, you know, what's the best way for you to interact and write and speak and whatnot about what you used to encounter now that you've learned some other things. So I know that this is one of the things. I'll just start off by saying this. John and I are pastors, and so we deal with this in our own congregations on the regular as people are exposed to this, and they come to Grace Reformed Church or Covenant Baptist Church, and they're like, man, I've never experienced this before. And they start to learn things and categories are blown up and they start then to react against what they used to be taught, and they react against what they used to experience. And sometimes those reactions are, I'll just say, too strong, and they are laced with emotion and bitterness and anger that's actually not going to be helpful for you in the long term and are not going to be helpful for the people listening to you over the long term.
I can remember my transition from fundamentalism. You know, I grew up in a King James only fundamentalist Baptist background, and I slowly started making transitions, and the men and women who helped me transition, they learned how to communicate their differences with me and their concerns in a loving and gentle and meek tone. Those who came in and basically smashed everybody that I respected and I loved even men that had hurt me, and I still loved them and respect them, it would be hard for me to listen to them because I would just see anger and hatred, and I would, yeah. I'm like, you're just mad, and I'm not going to talk to a crazy mad person because there's nothing good that comes out of that. And what was sad is that I eventually became that crazy mad person once I discovered the freedom and the joy of things like Calvinism. I wanted the whole world to know this amazing, powerful God, and I would theologically just beat people over the head because they were wrong. And you feel a lot of self-justification in these moments because you're right, and you know you're right because you have scripture on your side.
And you're loving people because you're giving them the truth.
Right.
You know?
And you were illustrations like, well, if someone's in a burning house and they don't know that it's burning, and is it really loving to just coerce them out or to pull them out?
You know,
and I'm like that, but that's not how it works. It's a wrong analogy. So you know, there's so much put on you as the individual, assuming that you have the capacity and power to change the hearts and minds of people, and you don't.
Yeah. So I'm going to make I have another comment that I want to make that's related to just sustainability in the faith. In the Christian life, and I'll get to that in a minute. But this is maybe just a brief interjection, a little public service announcement here. You and I talked about this before we recorded, John, and I think it's appropriate for us to say to this group of people, we will fail in things. We always want to be clear. And where we're not clear, we want to clear things up. We've already said that. But one of our aims with our recording and our content that we produce is to be charitable and gracious, humble and kind in the way that we speak. And we do not want to, first of all, I mean, just intellectually, we don't want to commit logical fallacies. We don't want to build straw men and caricature others and those kinds of things, because that doesn't do anything good for our position long term. But we want to strike this gracious and humble, gentle tone, because we think that it's going to actually give the ministry credibility over the long haul. We're not going to alienate people. We're not going to anger people with the tone and the demeanor with which we communicate. And so we are going to err, I think, on the side of humility and gentleness for that reason. And we do not want Theocast to be one of these ministries that it sparkles and fades. Like, man alive, there's a lot of shine and a lot of traction on the front end because you get a couple of shock jocks behind the microphone. That does not help anyone. You know, it fuels people. I've kind of said this before, and this will lead into my sustainability analogies. If you're okay with that, John, you jump in at any point. But it's kind of like, you all know what we mean here by you can't just live on like sugary snacks and candy. You know, your blood sugar spikes really quickly and you feel great and it's satisfying, but then you crash. That's what like shock jock theology does. Mm-hmm. It works really well in the near term. You can gather a following, you know, and you can get people really rallied around this kind of persona and the fact that we are all reacting against what we used to experience that was bad. But that will not carry the day for long. And that's just, it's not wise, and it's not biblical. It's not godly. And so that's not what we aim to do here. Do you have thoughts about that before I jump into the sustainability things that are related?
No, I do. This is, you do see in the New Testament where Paul and the New Testament writers will make reference to dangerous theology and to individuals. Sure. Yeah. But I would say the majority of their epistles are designed to build up the saints and then give instructions upon the correct theology. So you don't have a lot of, you will have Paul addressing individuals. Like Galatians is a great example. He says some pretty harsh things in there.
Sure.
You know, he says, you know, who bewitched you? He calls them fools.
He confronts Peter.
Yeah.
The account of that.
And there's a place for strong language.
Sure.
But when you're dealing with people who are making a theological transition and they hold it dearly, I can tell you how I led my wife was an epic failure. And I've heard from people who've reached out and said, how do I care for my spouse who's in opposition to me for whatever theological position they find themselves in? And I can say how not to do it.
Exactly. Well, I tell you what not to do.
I came in with a sledgehammer and just absolutely tried to prove to her that she was standing on, you know, shaky ground, and that if I just if I just punched it right here, the whole entire world would fall apart. And it did not, she just could not hear me with a sledgehammer in my hand. And so what I had to learn to do was build a sound theological platform next to her and let her see, do you see how much safer and sound and more accurate this is? And she starts looking at the sinking sand she's in, and she looks at the platform I'm standing on. She's like, yeah, I think I'm going to come over.
And that's right. That solid theological platform, it's obviously there's more than this, but it is at the heart of it, the sufficiency of Jesus Christ.
That's right.
Right. And that's what we're trying to pull people on to, even here at Theocast, is any deconstruction we do, you know, pointing at the nature of the sinking sand or the fact that that boat is going down, is simply in order to pull people over to what's better.
It's a comparative. Built upon
Christ. That's right.
That's right.
So let me say this too. This is meant to be pastoral, you know, towards, I mean, if any of the members of CBC are listening, I would want them to hear this, but certainly for those of you out there who are SR members, I would want you to hear this as well. I've already used the sugary snacks illustration about how it just doesn't sustain you for long. You know, you kind of sparkle and fade, you soar and you crash and all that. Well, I think there also is a tendency amongst all of us theologically to try to survive based upon kind of what I would call a reactionary mindset. We're always reacting to something. There's always some new thing that we're getting excited about. And we kind of go from one thing to the next thing. The way that, let me use a sports analogy. People know I love sports. And so let's talk about football, my favorite sport. You hear a lot of teams, like in the college level in particular, you'll hear coaches talk like this and players talk like this. They talk about how they're disrespected. They'll talk about how they want to play with a chip on their shoulder and they want to prove everybody wrong, right? And this is like a great motivator. You know, we're going to go out there and prove the world wrong. We're going to play with an edge because everybody's hating on us. Well, that, I would say, will only work in the short term as far as a motivator for performance. It will not sustain over the long term. You got to have something better than that, better fuel than that, if you're going to build a successful program over decades. Because you can't constantly be like, everybody's doubting us, everybody's hating on us, we're going to go out and play with a chip on our shoulder. Because eventually, I would assume you want to be good enough that people know you're good. So how are you going to make it over the long term? I would say the same is true in theology, where I notice a pattern amongst many that even find their way into confessional reform theology. They find their way into confessional reform theology because they've been exposed to it and they agree with it. And they're like, man, it's so much better than what I used to know. And then they have all of this fuel because of their animosity and their dislike of what they came from. And it fuels them for a season. And then it's like, okay, well, there's got to be some new fuel because I was fueled by animus towards fundamentalism or whatever, or lordship salvation. But now I'm I'm 5 years in, and I'm running out of gas. I need something else. Maybe it's biblical manhood and womanhood. Maybe it's, you know, therapeutic notions of other things, you know, going on in the church and how we do counseling or whatever it is. And you latch onto this new thing that then becomes your gasoline, your fuel for the next 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. But you end up doing what we critique evangelicals for doing all the time, which is from one obsession to the next. Whereas what we are trying to do here is that long-term sustainable fuel. We're going low glycemic index snacks here. Like, we're trying to feed people with stuff that's consistent, that's built on Christ week after week after week on this podcast. And I know that's how John and I approach pastoral ministry. We're not going to be talking about this sparkly, sweet stuff and shiny things. We're going to keep preaching Christ because that's what's going to carry the day.
Yeah,
thoughts, I think, John, that, I said a lot. That was like a monologue.
Yeah, no, sorry. I think Theocast and I can say with confidence, both of us, what we say here is very much what we would say in the room with any one of our congregants. And often I do this podcast based upon what our congregants need.
Sure.
And
because we assume, you know, our congregants are like other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Our job as shepherds is to protect anything that would cause our people that we love and care for to go astray. I mean, this is Ephesians 4, that the responsibility of the teachers and elders and preachers is to equip the saints for the work of ministry so they're not tossed about by every wind of doctrine, right? that means you have to build them up towards something, not necessarily away from something. Mm-hmm. If I'm always just kind of keeping problems away from them, I'm not teaching them how to deal with the problems. Mm-hmm. So it is true that at times we need to ward things off that will cause someone to trust in something other than Jesus Christ.
That's right.
But Christ must be the strongest pull.
Yes.
And if I'm always pointing out what they shouldn't do, yep, you are going to exhaust people.
You are.
Because they can think about is, well, I can see all the things I'm not supposed to do.
Right.
Whereas Ephesians or Hebrews says, set those things aside to do something, which is look unto Jesus, right? The author and finisher.
Well, it's been said many times, John, what's the best way to teach people to recognize a counterfeit? It's to show them the real thing over and over and over again. I mean, that's true with respect to like identifying fake currency. It's like you keep showing people what the real thing looks like and they can identify the counterfeit. And I think, and obviously it's not that you don't ever show them the counterfeit. It's not that you don't ever point out error, like you just said.
Right.
But the main diet is always here is Christ and here is the gospel.
Yeah. Well, it's like even with your own children, as they're growing up and they're eating, you can't go around just saying what you can't eat. You need to tell them what they can eat and then give them varieties and show them the benefits of it. But if it's like you can't have, you wake up in the morning, you're like, you can't have donuts, you can't have candy bars, you can't have sugary syrup, you can't. And they're just kind of like, what can I have?
What can I have?
So this is, I would describe Rob Bell and Gunger in this way. They were brilliant in pointing out what you can't do or what was wrong or what was off.
Yeah.
But they got so far down in the weeds, they actually lost sight of Jesus. I mean, they literally have lost their minds.
They have abandoned faith altogether.
That's right. They deconstructed so much that the way I would describe it is they pulled every board off of a boat that was sinking and said, see, this thing is sinking. And then they sank. Yeah. I was like, well, you should have found your way over to Christ.
That's right.
Yeah. My other thing, Justin, as you were talking, I know this is going to sound hard for some people to hear, but I'm speaking about myself. So I'm speaking from experience. So take this.
Same. And a lot of the things that I said that were characteristic of me and I still fight against them. Yeah.
Right. A lot of the anger we have towards theological men and positions, they did hurt us. They abused us. I myself have felt theological abuse from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Some people even you would know. I have personal experiences that they're personal. And if you're not careful, instead of moving on with what the great commission that has been given to us and focusing on our local churches and the ministry of the gospel going forward, we try and get revenge. Mm-hmm. We try and hurt people the way in which they have hurt us. And I will tell you that if you listen to scripture, revenge, it belongs to the God. Lord.
Yeah.
And if you allow that, how many movies has been made where people seek revenge and at the end, they're empty? They now have regret because they did things they know they shouldn't have done, but they justified them because look how evil this person is.
Well, it's just
I need to stop them.
Revenge is also a very short-term motivator.
Oh, yeah.
It is, yeah.
So the Watchdog Ministries, I have rescued so and so of you, so many people out of the Watchdog Ministry habits and mentalities where they say, oh, I just really want to protect these people and I want to rescue them out of, you know, you could say Pentecostalism whatever it is. And when you get them to sit down, it's not why they're doing it. They love to prove other people are wrong and that just gives them a spike in their self-righteousness. And I'm like, yeah, well, it isn't going to last long term because you're not kind, you're not patient, you're not gentle, you're not long-suffering, you're definitely not showing love.
Nobody's going to want to listen to you for long. Yeah.
No.
If you do it that way. Anyway, so those were some very, I think, behind the curtain, unfiltered thoughts from John and from myself. And you guys, those things that we just said, I mean, there may be some biblically informed stuff there. We think there's some wisdom in it, but you do with them what you will. And may the Lord give us all grace that we would love one another and be kind and charitable and humble and help one another as we all seek to trust Christ and live life in this fallen world as we make our way to be with the Lord forever. So, John, it was good for me too, man, to get back behind the mic with you and to have this conversation today. I'm really thankful for it. And I hope Many listening feel the same way. And we love you guys. We appreciate your partnership with Theocast. We don't take it for granted that anybody would ever want to partner with this ministry. Continue to pray for us as you think of us and get on the SR app and interact with each other. And John and I know we'll aim to get in there as much as we can, and maybe a live chat coming soon the day that this episode releases.
Yeah. And thanks for being patient with us on trying to get these groups up. It's a little harder than we thought. So we're recruiting help to get these up. So thanks for that.
Appreciate you guys. Grace and peace to you.